Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
You're listening to America This Week. I am Carrie Weber, Executive Editor at America, and I am joined by Father Matt Malone, our Editor-in-Chief, and Kevin Clark, our Senior Editor and Chief Correspondent.
This last week, we celebrated the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Indeed.
And we had a fantastic piece, cover story, by one of our contributing writers, Nicole Flores, called Guadalupe's Legacy: How a 486-year-old vision of Mary in Mexico continues to influence the Church, which is, of course, at americamagazine.org.
Indeed. Nicole Flores is an assistant professor of religious studies at the University of Virginia, and she writes a lot about the significance of Catholic and Latino theology and ethics on a lot of different levels. And she is an accomplished scholar and writer, and we're glad to have her in our pages. Nicole, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I wonder if you could start a little bit with a little of your sort of personal connection to Our Lady of Guadalupe. The article starts out with a little reflection on your grandmother, who had her own connection to Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Yes, yes. Well, my grandmother's name, of course, was, as I say in the article, Maria Guadalupe Garcia Flores. And when I was a little girl, she was trying to actually learn how to say Guadalupe and who Guadalupe was when my grandmother was trying to teach me how to pronounce and spell her very, very long name. so she kind of introduced me to her with tenderness and in the process of education, really. You know, she wanted me to know the story, but she really wanted, more so than the encounter between Guadalupe and Juan Diego, she wanted me to know how significant Guadalupe is for her, not only as her namesake, but for her faith. And my grandmother was a woman of extraordinary faith. She went to Mass on a daily basis. I think, as I mentioned in the article, she raised my father along with his 11 brothers and sisters in poverty, but did so with such grace and beauty and perseverance, and so much of that she attributed to her faith in Jesus Christ. But that faith was lived out in her devotion to Guadalupe throughout her life. So that really influenced me, seeing the way that she was grounded by her relationship with Guadalupe, and how that not only humbled her but gave her strength to encounter life, and to encounter this particular life that she lived.
And, you know, before we actually talk about how the Our Lady of Guadalupe is being appropriated today, how is it that this came to be such a popular way of understanding and approaching Our Lady?
That's a great question. I think that, at least in the United States, some of it has to do with the history of Mexican Americans in the United States. You know, of course, there's a colonial history in relation to Catholicism that doesn't get discussed, I think, nearly as much as it ought to and it could be, with great profit to our self-understanding of the Church in the United States. But of course, the Church in the southwestern United States already had a deep devotion to Guadalupe in it at the time that large swaths of the southwestern United States became a part of the United States. So I think that mentality gets lost in the conversation about why it is that the Virgin is so prominent here, but also, of course, through immigration specifically, her image has continued to be pervasive within the Church in the United States. But I also think there's such a strong draw and a universal appeal of the story of the beauty of her symbol and the way that she comes to Juan Diego and empowers him. And I see so many different groups seeing themselves, and so many different individuals really seeing themselves within that story and seeing their own experiences kind of resonated within that. So part of it is, you know, simply a political, historical kind of unfolding of Guadalupe's significance to faith and to culture and to politics, but also some of it is just that so many people are drawn to her image, regardless of where they come from or regardless of their background.
Well, I think one interesting thing is that the sort of aesthetics of the image that we use of her are particularly interesting and kind of gritty and real in a way that some other images of the Blessed Mother might not be. That, you know, she represents someone with brown skin. She has that sunburst behind her. She's standing, you know, on a snake. She kind of just looks cool and like harder in a way that you don't always associate with it. So it's, I mean, it makes for good tattoos for a lot of people as well. It translates.
She's a beautiful tattoo. She looks gorgeous on all matters of t-shirts and candles and belts and bottle caps. That's for sure. But I think specifically for Mexican American women and for Latinas more generally, her brown skin being such an affirmation of our beauty, I think it's very rare, although increasingly more common to see images of Latinas represented as being beautiful in society and within the media. So a part of my own draw to her is, wow, this image is so beautiful, and she's our mother, and she's brown like me. And
yeah,
there's something really kind of beautiful about that. I know how I account for necessarily how that appeals to everyone, but there is something about the actual image. And even when you start looking at the symbolism, each element of the image really has its own deep, rich meaning.
Right, right. It's very deep.
During Advent, we look at the black band around her waist, which of course is Aztec symbolism for maternity. So a lot of people are really drawn to that and how she appears within, you know, within the process of her pregnancy, and that's a part of her image that is visible and that is highlighted. I think that's so fascinating and beautiful.
One of the things you mentioned in your article, Nicole, is that she's also a challenging image for a lot of women who sort of have grown up with a devotion to her in their family. Can you talk a little bit about how that might play out?
Yes, definitely. So for as much as Guadalupe has genuinely and authentically inspired and empowered women, there's also ways in which her image has been leveraged to pit women against each other, to emphasize versions of women's identity that aren't necessarily ones that promote a well-rounded image of womanhood, and even sometimes are used to promote harmful dynamics and suffering for women ourselves, such as we see in terms of the use of the image to separate women who are pure in a very narrow way from women who are profane in a narrow way. And of course, in our Catholic faith, we know that all of us are sinners who require the grace of God, who need and who long for the grace of God to sanctify us. So the story is not just that a woman is either pure or profane, that she's either like Guadalupe or like the image she's pitted against, which is La Malinche, which is an unpure woman in the folklore. So those kind of tensions around her meaning for Latinas, but I think for women in general, are very much alive.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And you speak in particular about one group of women who has sort of chosen some other symbols for their work, the crosses that they've chosen. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yes. So in Ciudad Juarez, on the U.S.-Mexico border, systematic killing of women, what is known as feminicide. Some people have referred to this as femicide, but the language of feminicide refers to the systematic killing of women because they are women, has been a major problem for that particular community and the surrounding areas. And the women who have wanted to respond to this in a public way have not turned to La Virgen de Guadalupe as their symbol of empowerment, in part because they see dynamics of this Guadalupe Malinche binary kind of participating in the perpetuation of the systematic killing of women, that women who are killed are often blamed for their own deaths, for working outside the home, which would be seen as an impure activity, or for allegedly leading a double life, which is often proven to be untrue of the women who are killed. So they see this this binary as being unhelpful for the message of liberation and of justice that they want to put forward. So instead, in a very compelling way, the women have selected for themselves to paint crosses pink to represent their womanhood, and to inscribe the names of women who have been murdered along the crossbar. So in this aesthetic move, they associate the women who have been killed not with any simplistic image of what it means to be a pure or good woman, but with Christ and with the salvation of Christ, and that Christ is on the side of those who suffer and those who are victimized, and on the side of the women. And this has been such a powerful and prophetic symbol within this context, really drawing attention to the dignity of the women and their humanity in ways that, at least in this case, they did not see Guadalupe as necessarily the most effective image for advancing that message.
Nicole, the devotion to Our Lady of Guadalupe has sort of, I mean, you can track the movement of the Mexican-American community. I lived in Chicago for many years where there's a giant church on the south side that I believe was established in the 20s, Our Lady of Guadalupe. And this is devotion, as I understand, that has spread outside of the Mexican community and into other communities of Latino people.
Yes, indeed. So, of course, I'm Mexican American, and my frame of reference has really been from within that particular context. But one thing that is really wonderful, I think, within the theology of the church, specifically among Latino theologians, Latino and Latina theologians, is that Guadalupe has become a source of theological reflection and also devotion for a wide range of Latinos and Latinas throughout the church. So actually, well, I grew up, you know, of course, kind of in a culture imbued with her presence. My academic and theological interest for her image has actually been communicated to me from Cuban theologians, Cuban-American theologians, such as Roberto Goizueta, Alejandro García Rivera, Cecilia González Enduro, one of our other writers at America, and that the way that they have developed a relationship with her image and with her story, and how the image has been important to them as Cuban-Americans living away from their homeland, living in exile, and how they have really tapped into the beauty of her image as a source of sustenance and liberation, really inspired me to kind of have a new lens and a new perspective on my Mexican-American, very specific, very particular experience and encounter with Guadalupe. So, and I think this is also true in terms of a liturgical devotions. I live in Virginia, and the parish I attend, a wonderful parish, Church of the Incarnation, has a very large Latino, Latina community, primarily Mexican, but not exclusively. And every feast day, we have a series of celebrations that bring together not just our Latinos and our Latinas, but our entire church in various aspects. Now, those who are most devoted tend to be those who are from Mexico and who get up in the morning and
Early in the morning.
Bring the Virgin to the parish, but everybody really pitches in because everybody feels so deeply moved by her image and her presence to our parish.
There's in my home parish in beautiful Croton on Hudson, Holy Name of Mary. They also have a very large Our Lady of Guadalupe celebration every year, which sort of begs the question for people who are non-Latino. It's obvious the appeal it could have among Latino Catholics. What does Our Lady of Guadalupe say to the rest? I mean, she is the patroness of the Americas, named so by St. John Paul II. What is her message for non-Latino Catholics who find her image compelling and want to learn more about her?
Well, in some ways, it's a very similar message. You know, that story of her appearance to Juan Diego in the midst of devastation, I think is one that really appeals to so many of us, regardless of where we're from. And even though it's important, I think, to remember that that encounter happened to a particular person on a particular hill in a particular time and place, there's something that is so classic about that story that it really draws people in who are suffering and who are longing for consolation, who are longing for strength. So I think that's a part of her major appeal. But in terms of how she speaks to non-Latinos, I've been thinking about this a lot. I'm actually married to a non-Latino. I'm married to a Canadian. And a part of our conversations have always been about, you know, who... As our patroness of the Americas, which include Canada, who is she to Canadians who maybe, you know, didn't grow up with a devotion to her in their church? And from my perspective, I think some of that has to do with listening to her story and to paying attention to the particular aspects of it and being attentive to how her image is specifically saying something about the dignity and the liberation of people who are on the underside of history, as they would say, for people who are suffering, who've been on the margins. So as much as she calls us and comforts us, she also, I think, when best interpreted, gives pause and maybe shows us how not every story needs to be about us in terms of the culture from which it comes in order to have significance. I've actually received this question from some of my friends who've read the article, what does this story have to do with men? What does Guadalupe mean for men? And I found that to be a really challenging and compelling question, but I think my answer to that is that Guadalupe calls men to maybe give some space over in terms of leadership, to take a role that is one of listening and one of attention, and that being an important part of not just personal devotion, but being a part of our church and being a part of a society where we're able to attend to and learn from stories and images that are not specifically our own or all about us.
Right, and it certainly speaks to me in the sense of telling me something about how it is that we're meant to be church. Because, you know, I remember that you know, Juan Diego, like Bernadette Subaru, like Mary Magdalene, wasn't believed. when he shared this news, and went back and forth with the bishop, who was kind of obstinate, and then eventually, you know, he relented, and there's something in that story. The bishop relented, and there is something in that story about, you know, our obligation as Christians to represent our experience of God and the grace that we've received to bring that to the community and to the people who lead our community, and to represent that, and for them to listen and then for us to listen to them. So I think you were absolutely right to pinpoint that quality of listening, that quality of the story, because that is what speaks to me immediately when I hear the story.
Yeah, there is a chastening of any and all of us with power in that story. We don't always read ourselves as the bishop in the story, but perhaps we could read it with prophets to think about ourselves in that position, and maybe not necessarily as Juan Diego.
Right. Right.
Right, right. Who are we maybe not paying enough attention to in our own lives, which whether that's a systemic group or whether that's just an individual that we might not be listening to enough. There's a lot to learn from that story.
I prefer to be the protagonist and know my stories, though. So
are you Guadalupe in this one?
No, come on. Yes. I'm Juan Diego, as far as I'll go.
Yeah.
Have you been to see the Tilma in Mexico City?
I have. I've only been once, which is a great sadness to me. But when I went, it's actually kind of a powerful story, at least for me in my life. I went as a researcher. I wrote my dissertation in part on Our Lady of Guadalupe. So I came with my camera and my notebook, and I was ready to go in and, you know, do my work. And as soon as I walked through the door of the Basilica, I just lost it. I started crying. I was so powerfully moved, and it just completely removed me from that headspace of needing to kind of control the story. And of course, I have deep academic interest in both the theological story and the historical and philosophical circumstances out of which it emerged. But there was something about it that, on a very basic level, it was about my faith and my relationship with Guadalupe, and thus my relationship with her son. And it was very powerful. And I really would love to go back. I've only been just that once.
Well, amen. I went for the very first time a couple of years ago. I went down to Mexico City to interview the nuncio there. I had never been before, and I was in a different way, but also profoundly moved by the experience. And I particularly liked the uneven floor of the basilica, and
that's a sort of an uneven floor all over Mexico City.
Well, what I loved about it was it to me was a perfect symbol of the church, you know, rocked but still standing, and you know, that to me, that's hope, because that it's infused, it's a faithfulness that's infused with a realism. That in any case speaks to me very loudly. The piece is called Guadalupe's Legacy: How a 486-year-old vision of Mary in Mexico continues to influence the church. You can find it at americamagazine.org. It's by Nicole Flores. Thanks so much for being with us, Nicole.
Thank you all.
Okay. Have a happy Advent and a blessed Christmas. We should also note that speaking of disabusing people of false notions of the Pope, he does not use WhatsApp.
He does not.
Pope Francis, is that a rumor going around?
There was a rumor going around that the Pope is
well,
on
that
WhatsApp.
That explains all those unanswered messages.
And he is not on WhatsApp. There was a rumor going around.
I'm just trying to get over.
The Pope uses WhatsApp to convey blessings to people.
Wow.
And the Vatican released a statement while we were on the air.
It released a statement.
Saying
all
that,
right.
And you can read the story from Catholic News Service at americamagazine.org.
All right.
Saying that the Pope does not, in fact, use WhatsApp, and noting in the story that the Pope actually is a bit of a, well, let's say he's improficient in social media.
On that, I can sympathize entirely.
So you
Fair
have been
enough.
Listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. For more on the stories we talked about today, and for lots more coverage of the intersection of the church and the world, you can visit us at americamagazine.org, and also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. And to subscribe to America, call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. For Kevin Clark and Kerry Weber, I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you, and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.